Back to My Garden, episode 12.
Welcome to Back to My Garden. Discover your passion for gardening. Here's Dave Ledoux.
This episode of Back to My Garden brought to you by Coffee Royalty. Can you really lose 5, 10, even 20 pounds or more just by switching your coffee or tea? Find out more at www.coffeeroyalty.com. Hello, garden lover. Do you want to save time, save money, and have the best garden ever? Receive free tips, strategies, and gardening techniques from passionate gardeners from around the world. Join the VIP club for free today at www.backtomygarden.com/VIP. Shh, it's only for listeners of the podcast. Well, good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending on where you are in the world when you hear this. I'm Dave Ledoux. Welcome to another edition of Back to My Garden. Grab your pencils and notebooks if you're taking notes. If you're driving, keep both hands on the wheel. I'll have all the show notes up on the blog. Today, we have a great guest. He is an author, a food blogger, a garden lover. He's the visionary genius behind A Gardener's Notebook. We'll talk more about that. He's a new media and technology enthusiast. He's been podcasting now for almost a decade. He is found online on several properties. I'll direct you to his blog here momentarily. And I want you to also check out his Instagram account where he does a lot of photography on his gardening passion. Please welcome the show, Mr. Douglas Welch. Douglas, welcome.
Thank you for having me, Dave. It's always a pleasure to talk to fellow garden enthusiasts out there, as well as technology enthusiasts, too.
I want to hear a little bit about your gardening background, as do our listeners. Can you just take a minute, share a little bit about yourself and your gardening?
You know, I would assume, because I probably don't remember, but I was probably shoving fistfuls of garden dirt in my mouth before I could even walk or talk. I grew up in a small farm town in Ohio, and from my earliest memories, everyone, my father, my neighbors, my grandmother, they all had gardens. And often I was called to duty in those gardens, whether I wanted to do it or not. And so it was something that was just intrinsic to my life from the very beginning. Unlike an urban kid like my son, for example, gardening can be somewhat of an unknown to them because they don't grow up with it. But I had what I describe as a 1950s upbringing in the 1970s.
I understand completely. There's only two categories. There's the, I grew up gardening and I was unpaid forced labor, or I found it as an adult.
Yeah, it seems to be. I had to re-find it as an adult, actually, because of the forced labor when I was a kid.
Can we start there, perhaps, as you and I are both in the same canoe, and a lot of adults, we view it kind of as the work, or it's just more work, and then there's an awakening or a discovery. What was your first moments like when you decided to grow something as an adult?
You know, as many things do, it all had to do with other changes in our life. We had moved to Los Angeles in 1986. We had lived, of course, in apartments, young marrieds, for many years. Finally, in 98, we bought our first home. And it just so happened that the home we bought had a 10-year-old garden, front and back, not a lick of lawn on the property, roses and azaleas and huge trees, way too many trees, actually. And so even though we live here in the middle of Van Nuys, in the middle of the urban city, we have this very rustic garden. When that house became available, we actually looked at it. We were touring the house, and we're like, oh my God, what a wonderful garden. We'd heard other people come through the house as well, telling the owners who had spent all this time building this garden, oh yeah, we'll just tear that out and put a lawn back in. So we were kind of the opposite way around, and we think actually that had something to do with us getting this house. What that allowed me to do, what it forced me to do, is to dive back into gardening. I actually talked with the elderly owner who owned the home before us and said, what types of roses are these? What types of azaleas are these? What do I need to know about this garden to keep it going? What did you like about it? And all this stuff. So it was almost immersion therapy. Because we bought the home, I suddenly had a bigger garden, decorative garden, certainly, than I'd ever had before in my life.
Do you find it amazing that there's always a conversation when two gardeners get together, even if they're complete strangers?
Oh yeah, I think that's true of any, you know, affinity area like technology or podcasting or anything else as well. You get two gardeners together, and somebody like, well, what's this bug? And have you seen this? And have you tried this plant? And how come my plant has brown spots on its leaves? And oftentimes I'm like, you know, I'm gonna have to look that up because I don't know. But yeah, there's just anything you can find that helps bridge the gap with people. I think is a great thing in life. My wife and I are big proponents of conversation. We love having conversations. If we have parties, we don't have loud music playing in the background. We have conversations. And, I think it definitely comes from that aspect of when you meet someone who has an interest like you do, whether it's gardening or dogs or cats or literature or whatever, there's just a natural conversation that takes place that suddenly takes you from being strangers to being someone who has something in common with you.
My father, being an educator, that was one of his definitions of when are you finally going to grow up, is when you stop going to nightclubs and you actually want to be around people and talk.
Yeah, that's an interesting way of looking at it. Among all the stuff that I do, I also do a career column and podcast on a weekly basis. And I often have commented there that, you know, it's not networking if you can't hear each other, what each other are saying. You know, so many networking quote unquote events want to happen in nightclubs. I'm like, no, that's not networking. That's just partying. And partying is fine. Partying is there's an opportunity and a reason for partying, but that is not networking.
You know, when you were painting the picture of your move in Van Nuys, a lot of people that listen to this podcast are city dwellers in apartments. They're starting their very first garden, some of them little more than containers on a patio or even on a windowsill. So you have this backyard. That's kind of the dream that a lot of people aspire to. What were some of the challenges you had that first season with the garden?
For us, especially living here in Southern California, water is always an issue. Water and watering. I'm not the type who wants to go out and spend hours watering the garden every night, nor can I necessarily afford to do that. And so one of the first things I did was install some drip irrigation, some soaker hose irrigation, which is pretty much what I use to this day. The other challenge was, because the owner was elderly, the garden had not been well maintained for the last several years. It was significantly overgrown. There was some great bones there, but I would say even to this day, we're still kind of editing the garden. There were probably twice as many trees on the property as there are now. I have probably taken out, and these are, you know, we've taken out some big trees as well for a variety of reasons, but a lot of these were smaller trees, you know, bigger than saplings, but not fully grown mature trees. And we've had to creatively look at the garden each time and say, okay, if I take that tree out, we'll leave that one there to make that view and remove this one and leave that tree there. And you kind of have to creatively edit, I call it. So that was one of the bigger challenges there. We've now been here 18 years, and so some of the plants are reaching the end of their life. And so recently we've been retrofitting some front beds in the front yard area, because the plants have expired. You know, they've just got to the end of their lifespan. So it's been a lot of maintenance. I remember saying a few years ago, maybe 5 or 6 years ago, I said to my wife, we were sitting in the garden one time, and I said, you know, I think we finally got to the point now where we're adding stuff to the garden rather than subtracting.
Phase two.
Yeah, it took a long time to edit things down to the point where you could then start to more intelligently grow things back out.
And as far as gardening in your life today as an adult, there's some people look at it, okay, I'm going to grow my own vegetables or I'm going to grow my own flowers. I like to talk a little deeper about, I don't know if spiritual is the right word for everybody, but there's something more that gardening can bring to people, whether it's therapeutic or relaxing. What is gardening like for you on the deeper level?
You know, for me, moving from a town of 2,000 people where I grew up, went to college in a town with 15,000 students and 15,000 townies, and then moved to Cleveland, which had about 2 million people for 9 months, and then moved to Los Angeles with 14 million plus. As you might imagine, the culture shock was quite extreme. And for me, gardening is a way of retreating from the urban landscape and the hustle and the bustle, which you're just necessarily surrounded with. It's definitely a way of getting away from it for a little bit. I also like to invite people into our garden. We typically have, you know, one or two garden parties every year just to bring friends over and hang out and have food and potluck or whatever. So for me, it's definitely a retreat. I have found from what my friends have said as well that they consider our garden a retreat. It's very woodland garden, which is a nice way of saying it's rather brown sometimes. But it does have this aspect of being this quiet little preserve in the middle of this urban area. And for me, definitely, that is part of it. We also get wildlife in the garden. We have our possums and our raccoons and our birds and squirrels and everything else here. And so often I will find myself just sitting out in the garden and watching that, or watching the wind through the leaves, or, you know, looking at the flowers. It's simply a way for me to withdraw a bit from Hollywood, if you will. We're only, you know, a couple miles from Hollywood where we live here. And my wife actually worked in the entertainment industry as a television writer. So we were heavily immersed in that environment. So it definitely was nice to have a place we could retreat to from that.
So 18 years ago, you find this idyllic setting and you have some roses from the previous owner. Here we are now 18 years later. What's your garden like this season? What are you working on? What's frustrating you? What's giving you joy?
My wife has always wanted to grow more vegetables and more food. She didn't grow up with the forced labor in the garden, which sometimes growing food can trigger that a little bit. I am actually very inclined to grow food here. Unfortunately, because of all the mature trees, we don't have a lot of full sun areas in the garden, and that makes it a little more difficult. That said, over the last several years, and you can see this on the blog and through the videos that I do as it progresses year after year, we have a basically ongoing bed of sweet potatoes along one side of our front garden where roses used to be. There was a sewer project that destroyed that entire rose bed at one point, so we decided to do something else with it. But those sweet potatoes, because out here in California, we never or rarely get a hard frost here in the valley, they will just continue to grow. So I actually have to time them. I keep a calendar saying, well, 150 days, and then dig up. There's like three sections, and I know they're kind of all progression, you know, 150 days apart. And just we keep harvesting sweet potatoes out of the garden, and that has been just a joy for both of us. One, we like to eat them a lot, and the aspect of growing your own food is really, really neat. We've also grown some onions in the garden. Today's video that I just posted was about potting up some basil cuttings that I had taken from our basil plant. My wife is Sicilian American. She loves basil. I love to cook with it. I'm also the major cook in the family. And so we have lots of herbs and stuff. And for whatever reason, basil seems kind of hard to grow here in the valley. It doesn't like our climate or whatever, which is odd. But hopefully we're going to get some more of that going. I have a container garden with strawberries and some green onions and some carrots. I grow little Parisian carrots in one of the pots. Our garden soil isn't that great for growing carrots because you really need that kind of perfect soil. But the little round Parisian carrots grow really well in a container. And so that's definitely been what we've been going through lately. It's just trying to find ways of bringing more food products, more herb products into the garden. My wife also loves lavender, so we're constantly taking cuttings from our lavender and planting more lavender in the garden, just to have. We bring in bundles of it into the house and stuff like that. And it looks good in the garden, and it grows well in our Mediterranean climate.
Idyllic.
You know, the funny thing is you only can see your garden through your own eyes, and there is an aspect of gardening that I've written about in the blog and talked about in the podcast, which is when you walk out in the garden into your garden, you tend to see all the problems with it. And it takes having friends over or something to look at your garden and start to say things about your garden. It's like, oh, well, yeah, this is not that bad. Oh, okay. Just to remind you sometimes that, yes, I know there's too many leaves on the ground, and yes, that tree is not doing very well, and yes, that plant needs to be pruned or whatever. But seeing it through other people's eyes can really help you appreciate your own garden more.
I love how the story develops over time. The crisis, the sewer crisis in the rose bed, turns into a perpetual sweet potato machine.
You know, it's really surprising. And the joke is, too, I'm Mr. Frugal Gardener, Mr. Happenstance Gardener, Mr. Try It Out and See What Works. We had some potatoes sprouting in the pantry, and we had some sweet potatoes sprouting in the pantry. And having grown up with my grandmother planting you know, gosh, 50-foot long rows of potatoes when I was young. I knew how to plant, but I know how to cut up potatoes and put them in the soil and grow potatoes. And so that's what I did. I even did a video on it. Part of what I sort of use as a subtitle for my blog and podcast is come and see Doug screw up in his garden to some extent. So I say, let's try this. This should work. I knew it had worked in the past. I knew what we had done, you know, back in the day in the garden. And so this should work. They're looking pretty healthy. They got good pips on them. They're sprouted. This should work. And sure enough, they did. To the point where the sweet potatoes now, when I harvest an area, I actually pull up, I look for the plants with the strongest roots. I take the tubers off and I put those plants back in the ground and they grow another generation of sweet potatoes right from the plants themselves. So it's always kind of happenstance like that. Yes, the sewer line being torn up and ripping out all the roses. I told the workmen, let me know when you're coming so I can be there when you dig them up. I'll put them in water. I'll, you know, basically make bare root roses out of them again and protect them. Well, of course, they just piled them up in a pile and they all dried out. We just this week had the gas company out. We had a gas leak on the line coming to our house in that exact near that exact same bed. Well, luckily, the sweet potatoes are a lot easier to manage than roses. And so they kind of pushed them aside, dug the trench they needed, and filled it back in, and it didn't do much damage at all.
For those of you driving, keep both hands on the wheel. And if you're jogging at the gym, listening to the podcast here, I'm going to give out Douglas's blog and Twitter and social media stuff. I'll put it in the show notes. Head over to www.DouglasEWelch.com. That's DouglasEWelch.com. You'll see, is it 5 blogs off of that main portal?
Yeah, you'll see a lot of stuff on that. The main page is basically a portal to everything I do. But yeah, upper left-hand corner, you'll see 5 little iTunes-shaped icons for all the blogs and podcasts that I do, including a gardener's notebook.
A gardener's notebook. But I mean, you're prolific. Your passions and your hobbies and your interests are all documented there on Twitter at Gardener's Note BK. So GardnersNoteBK.
It's always hard. Yeah. It's always hard to create a usable Twitter account when you have such a long name, but that's the one I came up with.
Yeah, no, it's good, good, good. And if you're into Instagram on Douglas's Gardener's Notebook, there are photographs, really spectacular photographs from the Southern California Spring Garden Show in Costa Mesa. That must be just enormous. I've never been, but I would imagine that's just a colossal event.
It is very large, and it's one of those events that even despite the traffic from us to get there on a weekday, it's a bit troublesome. Actually, getting down there wasn't difficult, but getting back this year was really hard. It is an amazing show. I will say, it's not your typical, it's not your Chelsea, it's not your Malvern, it's not your, you know, out in the country garden show where you're out in the sun all day. This is actually takes place in a mall. They take over a 3-story mall in Costa Mesa. The bottom floor is your mini show gardens, and then you have two floors above you, which are around the inside of the mall, are all the vendors and exhibitors and stuff like that. They also have talks and seminars and various things there. So it's a little different in that way from what you might expect, you know, having grown up in the Midwest. But it is quite phenomenal from the breadth of stuff that you see there. The Iris Society, local Iris Society, is always putting on their show there. There are more orchids than I've ever seen in my life. And you can tell that from my pictures. I have to stop myself taking pictures of the orchids because I come back with hundreds of them. Just to let you know, too, while some of the photos do appear in the Instagram, there's actually on my website, and you can do a search on the Southern California Garden Show, there are full collections of all my photos from the show, as well as some videos that I did, kind of little montage videos of the show whenever we're there, both video and photographic montages. So if you want to get a small feeling of what I saw there, what interested me there, you can look to those things. Photography is one of my interests as well. Like, I'm not interested in enough, but it ties in very well with gardening. And you'll see that a lot of the photography I do is garden photography, whether in my own garden, at events, or just around the neighborhood.
Yeah, this is where I wanted to take the hard left, because I would be remiss if I didn't discuss new media with you, because you're a specialist. And in 20 years of gardening, everything's changed. I mean, you have the ability to impact thousands and thousands of interested gardeners all over the world in minutes. What has that evolution been like for you, kind of participating as well as an enthusiast?
It is really, really fun and neat. The people you meet online, I mean, face-to-face and you know, geographically based area, you only have the ability to meet so many people. But online, it sort of expands exponentially. And one of the best things I enjoy, of course, is being able to talk to people in other countries and in other climate areas. And, you know, in Australia or in Europe. My wife actually has family in Sicily that we visited a number of times. And we're always sharing stuff back and forth about what's going on in our gardens. One of our family members there has a beautiful garden at the back of his house. It's filled with fruit trees and almond trees and all sorts of plants and a huge basil crop that I wish I could grow here. That's what I'm trying to live up to, is Serafino's basil bed behind his house. But that in itself is amazing, and to be able to converse with these people either through your podcast and through your blogs or through comments or online through Garden Chat is a big chat that takes place at 6 o'clock my time. So it's 9 o'clock every Monday. And I try to stick my nose in there whenever I can. And people are all over the world engaging in that chat. From an enthusiast standpoint, a gardening enthusiast standpoint, it's great because it's like I have all these gardeners that I can ask questions to. You know, if I have a question about trees, there's a guy here right just south of me here in Southern California that I can hit up with all sorts of tree questions. But I could just as easily ask questions of anyone on the internet via Google, via the podcast itself, saying, hey, what is this plant? And show them a picture of it or show them a video of it if it's something I can't identify. And it really has expanded both my reach as a podcaster, but also my ability to research stuff through all the other gardeners that are out there.
Fantastic. You know, you've got 18 years under your belt. I'm in my third season of what I would call serious gardening, and my wife is like year 15. And I find great comfort in sharing what I call oopsies. Like, I'm the guy that forgot to drill holes in the containers before I built a container bed. And then I realize, oh, a whole bunch of people did that as well. Can you think of a catastrophic failure, mistake, or error that you made that you can share in kind of a humorous that people can relate to?
Oh, God, we don't have enough time for that. I fail every day in the garden, for goodness sakes. Oh, as I said, yesterday, today's video, I recorded it yesterday, I posted it, it was about me, you know, potting up some basil cuttings. I've had pot after pot after pot of basil fail, whether from seed or from plants from the nursery or whatever. You know, it's just one of those stupid things. Why is this such a problem? Honestly, with me, it is. There's all sorts of little failures. I think it's part of gardening. Is you know, you have that one that one plant in the garden. As I said, we don't get a killing frost here in the valley that often. But a few years ago, actually, it's been about 10 years ago now. We had 3 nights of frost. Bam, bam, bam. Well, people in Southern California love to grow tropicals, thinking, oh, well, we live in a desert. Well, we don't really live in a desert. We live in a Mediterranean climate, which is different. And sure enough, every tropical in my garden got whacked. I lost 2 hibiscus. I lost a new Aurelia that I had planted recently that was looking great. That poor thing. I walked out that the next morning, and what had been green and leafy the night before was nothing but a bare stick. Every leaf was on the ground. It's like, oh, I guess it isn't frost hardy. So nowadays, especially with the container garden we started a few years ago, you know, when the frost threatened this last winter, it's like boxes went over the containers, sheets went over some plants. I've learned my lesson. Because you think Southern California, it's beautiful, right? It's sunny. It's 100 degrees. No. And there are times in the winter where it can get below freezing, and sometimes significantly so, and our mountains end up ringed with snow. So that was, you know, a bit of a learning experience for me. I think I had fallen into the Southern California fallacy of, oh, nothing can hurt us here.
Did you have that optimism, like, oh, maybe they'll come back, or did you resign right away and know it was done?
Some of them, like the Aurelia, it was obvious they were dead. It was like, just pull it out now. Yeah. No, this was not even a Charlie Brown tree. This was a bare stick. I still laugh to this day just how dramatic the change was. Some of the plants got frostbitten. We have several large ficus trees. These aren't the typical office ficus trees. These are huge ficus benjaminas that I think actually I don't like that much. They're a little too dense for me, but they shade the garden, so I keep them. But the outside edges of these huge ficus trees all got burnt. So they looked, from the outside, you look, oh my gosh, these things are dead. But, you know, inside, of course, they weren't. So those things we just trimmed off the dead areas, and things came back pretty well. But, yeah, you'd like to be optimistic sometimes. I tend to be a realist in the garden. I'll look at something and go, I planted some, gold dust plants. And I can't remember the Latin name right off the top of my head. But I planted some of those from the nursery trying to green up an area. And they were like, oh, yes, yes, we're happy, we're happy, we're happy. Oh, we've got fungus and we're dead. And those you kind of like try to, no, a little more water, no, a little more fertilizer. No, really, I'll take, no, they're just on their way out. And there's nothing you can do. I researched it. The minute I saw it, I researched it and said, yeah, this is a fungus. And no, there's nothing you can really do about it. It just happens to be in certain garden soils. Oh, well, moving on.
This is the point in the show, Douglas, called Five Quick Questions, and this is my favorite part. You get to drop your wisdom and experience and point out some resources, and it's a little bit of fun. Are you ready to play?
It shows my age. I thought you were going to say this is the part of the show where we dance, but that's an old Saturday Night Live joke. Okay, deep breath. Get my password, head on here, as far as the old password show, and go.
Number one, in your opinion, what do you think stops most adults from beginning gardening?
lack of knowledge. I think a lot of people want to garden, but they don't know where to get started, which is hopefully what I try to provide in my blog and my podcast. I show them, hey, if I can do this, anybody can do this from a standpoint. I try to find easy ways to introduce them into garden and to get that pot on the shelf, to get that container garden with the strawberries growing, to get something easy but yet productive, that's an obvious visual indicator that, hey, I can do this. And I think then that leads to bigger things down the road. They do need to have that kind of first success, though. And so that's something I try to promote.
Fantastic.
Good answer.
Question two. What is the best gardening advice that you've ever received?
Oh, goodness. The best gardening advice I ever received is don't work in the garden so much, which I take to heart. I often describe myself as a lazy gardener. there are times to stop and enjoy your garden, and there are times to work in your garden. And that's something that's a little hard for me to balance out sometimes because I see so much that needs to be done. But there are times when I just need to go out in the garden with a cold beverage, put my feet up, and watch the birds.
Man, that is wisdom right there. That's good. Number three, if you had just two websites to share with a novice gardener, what would they be?
Oh, goodness gracious. First off, Garden Fork TV. Eric Rochow over at Garden Fork TV has been one of my constant subscriptions in my podcast and my blog list. I've actually chatted with him a few times. He's based out of Brooklyn, of all places, but him and his wife have a farmhouse, not really a farm, but a farmhouse up in Connecticut that they often do videos from and stuff like that. I like him because he's very much my sensibility of, we screw up and it's okay, and we're going to try it anyway, and here's some things we're going to do, and sort of has fun with it. Overall, so I really like that. And there's also the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener, Holly, and I'm going to hate this. I'm not going to remember the names. Why do I remember her name but not his name? WisconsinVegetableGardener.com, I believe. Please do a search on that. I'm trying to type as I talk, and that's just not going to work. So please go ahead and do a search on that. They have they're expanding their video series dramatically lately. I'm subscribed to them on YouTube, so I see all the new stuff. And they have a regular set of series that they do. And, again, very much focused on productivity, vegetable gardening, food gardening, preserving, stuff like that. And, again, very, very personable Midwest people like the people I grew up with.
Fantastic. Oh, and listeners, please head also over to Douglas's blog at douglasewelch.com and bookmark it and share his stuff on Twitter and Instagram and get that karma going. Question number four. Douglas, this is my third season gardening. Seriously, what is the number one book or resource that I need to study this year?
Okay. Now, this is going to vary because remind me again where you're located. You're in Ontario, right?
Zone 4 to 5, southern Ontario, kind of like Detroit. I'm only a couple hours from Cleveland.
I was going to say, you're just across the lake there from where I grew up. So there are going to be analogs to these books that are available for your area. I'll give you what I use here. But there's a magazine out here in California, been here since the turn of the century, called Sunset Magazine. And they do the what's called the Western Garden Book. Big, huge, fat paper tome. That has become my go-to guide for plant identification, how to grow stuff, what to put together and stuff like that. It's a really good kind of encyclopedic book. I vaguely remember, I know I saw a southern version of that. If they don't have something for you, look, that's definitely something. If you see something sunset related, you know, that would definitely be something to look for. Unfortunately, you may have to find an analog for your area in the farther north there. Another book, again, which it's not going to do you much good particularly, but I will recommend the style of book, and that is Pat Welch's Month by Month Southern California Gardener. When we got the garden, I happened to be working near a bookstore in Santa Monica, and I walked in and I saw this book on the shelf and went, oh, that's exactly what I need. I need someone to remind me what I'm supposed to do out here. Because, of course, gardening in Ohio and gardening here in Southern California, quite different. But if you can find a good month-by-month guide, just to remind you each time, and I've actually started to build kind of my own monthly guide in my Google Calendar. I keep my garden almanac, if you will, my own garden notebook in Google Calendar so that basically, I set yearly events when something blooms. So every year, I'm starting to collect more and more data so I can look at July 10th and say, oh, well, the hibiscus was blooming and these went in the ground and whatever. So I can kind of create that myself over time. But anything that just gives you a nice set of checklist reminders of what you might want to be thinking of this week.
Ding, time to dig the sweet potatoes.
Yes, exactly. I mean, what's funny is now because I'm doing so many videos, that's how I tell how long it's been. I look back through my video list and when did I talk about sweet potatoes? Oh, there's the last sweet potato harvest, and that was what date? Oh, okay, time to do it again.
And question number 5, look into your crystal ball.
No whammy.
Experimental hat. What is the number one thing every gardener should try to grow next year?
Generically, food. Mm-hmm. Of some site, whatever you like. Sweet potatoes came up for us because of just a happenstance. Sweet potatoes are easy. Potatoes are easy. And there's so many, if you look online now, there's so many ways of growing potatoes in containers or in trash cans or in grow bags. Or there's really no reason not to grow potatoes if you like them. And it's, again, it's one of those low work, high reward type of things you can plant. The first time you dump out your potato bin or dig up your potatoes from your garden or in the grow bag, whatever, and you see what you've got, it's like, wow, this is cool. You put these things in the ground and all of a sudden they multiply. It's, you know, for kids, they often say grow radishes, cause they're so, you know, 30 days to harvest and it gives them that initial reward that then will lead them further down the path. So definitely food of any type that you happen to like. Herbs are another thing. I'll go on just off the top of my head. I'll say go one other direction with that and find some decorative plant that you really like and grow that. I have lots of decorative plants on the garden as well. I enjoy them. I think they have a place in every garden. You need not only grow decoratively. You need not only grow for food. I think a good balance between them is great. And there is something about seeing that beautiful rose form during the bloom time. Whether you leave it on the plant like I do with most of mine, or actually bring some inside to have on the table, beauty is an important part of gardening. And there can be beauty in a vigorous sweet potato vine, and there can be beauty in a rose. So definitely find something that speaks to you, whether it's from your history, your family history, something your grandmother grew, something your parents always had in the house, something you've seen out where you're like, oh, I love that flower. I want that in my own garden. Passion flowers are one of those things for me. I slowly had them growing here for a little bit. I gather seeds whenever we walk through the neighborhood. But definitely I'd love to have a wall covered with passion flower vine. And that's on my list of things to do because they're just so alien looking.
brilliant answers. Our half hour's flown by. I want to make sure, listeners, that you head over to Douglas's blog at www.douglasewelch.com. Follow him on Twitter at GardenersNoteBK and share his information. There's so much great stuff on and content. And if you're into new media or technology, there's other blogs on Douglas's main portal that are worth checking out. Douglas, I'm actually going to turn this over and give you the last word to our listeners today. Do you have a pearl of wisdom or a note of encouragement for us on our adventures in gardening?
Yeah, I think I say this about everything that I do, whether it's about gardening or careers or new media or technology. It's like we learn best by doing. It is by the application of our hands to the soil, our minds to the problem, our fingers to the keyboard, our eye to the camera, that we learn the most. Sometimes I think people forget that and they try to learn everything through books or through websites and other things. And it's like, if you're learning something from a website, if you're learning something from a gardening book, apply it. And apply it as soon as you can, because it's in the action, it's in the doing that we learn the most about everything in our life, no matter whether it's gardening, technology, careers, new media, music, whatever. We learn by doing.
Fantastic. Douglas, on behalf of all of our listeners, thanks for being a guest today on Back to My Garden.
Thank you so much for having me. It's always a pleasure. As you said, when two gardeners get together, what are they? The conversation goes on and on and on. So it's always a pleasure to talk to people. It's a pleasure to talk to people in a different country. And it's, even if you are kind of back in my old stomping grounds of the mid-Americas, shall we say.
Fantastic. Thanks, Douglas. Hello, garden lover. It's Dave. All of the links, resources, and websites mentioned in this episode will be posted at www.backtomygarden.com/12.